Welcome back to the Community Online Podcast. Remember, you can always find us on Sundays streaming live at communityonline.tv. We hope to see you there.
How many of you have ever run a marathon? I never have myself, and to be honest, it's not something I've ever aspired to, but that doesn't mean I don't appreciate the magnitude of the accomplishment. In fact, I admire my friend and teammate, our Aurora community pastor, Rodrigo, who has become a prolific marathon runner. This past year, he's run the Chicago Marathon, the Berlin Marathon, and a few weeks ago, he ran a personal best of 3 hours and 19 minutes at a marathon in Arizona. That's crazy. Like, I wonder if I could ever be that fast. Did you know that now you can test your ability to keep pace with the world's elite marathon runners by running on the Tumbalator? Now, if you've never seen it, the Tumbalator is a giant treadmill that is designed to cushion people's falls if they couldn't keep up. And well, this is what happens. And now, let me show you a video of me trying to run on the Tumbalator. No, sorry. I'm just kidding. You would have been entertained, but I already know that I couldn't keep up. Now, there are some people like Rodrigo that seem to cruise through the marathon. But many runners hit what they call the wall about 18 or 20 miles into the race. Their muscles cramp, their heart rate skyrockets, they can find it hard to breathe. A number of years ago, I went as a spectator to the Chicago Marathon, and knowing this about the wall, I planted myself at the 18-mile mark to cheer on the runners. Sure, some people coasted on by, but you could actually physically see others hitting the wall. They would start limping or holding their side. Some would stop and bend over, gasping for air. Others would get sick right there on the race course. I'm sure some of them were able to get a second wind and keep going, but no doubt others had to stop. Sometimes you just can't run through a wall. And similar to those runners, we can hit a wall in our spiritual journey, and there's no running through it. In fact, if we don't know what to do when we hit the wall, it can take us out of the race. Throughout this series, we've been using this diagram, which describes a common experience in a person's faith journey. You start with a moment of trusting God. You become a Christ follower, and your life starts to make sense. You begin to go to church and attend a small group, and you start to experience growth with God. But then, something happens, a crisis of belief, and it almost always has to do with unexpected suffering. Now, we expect a little suffering in our lives. After all, if we do something stupid like spend too much money or drink too much, we expect to suffer some consequences. That kind of suffering is normally understood as a consequence of a bad decision. That is expected suffering. But unexpected suffering is so much worse. Unexpected suffering is the cancer diagnosis we never saw coming. Unexpected suffering is getting laid off at work. Unexpected suffering is the loss of a relationship or friendship we viewed as essential to our lives. And as time goes on and there are no answers to our pain, we can find ourselves stuck. We are stuck at the wall. The wall is what many writers and spiritual directors have come to refer to as the dark night of the soul, Back in the 1500s, there was a Spanish monk we now know as St. John of the Cross. And he wrote a poem about his experience at the wall that he called The Dark Night of the Soul. And I think that's the perfect imagery. A dark night. This is the moment when you can't see anything that you used to see before. It used to be that when you looked for God, you could find him. When you looked for hope, you could find it. When you looked for faith, you could find it. But now everything is all dark. And like how we might helplessly grope around for a light switch when trapped in an unfamiliar dark room, a dark night of the soul feels like a scary prison. You don't really know where you are or how to get out of the situation you're in. This dark night, it can last for a day, or it can last for weeks or months or even years. St. John of the Cross, he wasn't alone in describing this dark night of the soul. A lot of the writers of Scripture experienced something like this as well. In fact, we're here to tell you that experiencing a dark night of the soul is actually a surprisingly common part of a spiritual journey. There is that rare person, like an elite marathon runner, who just seems to dash through life. Most of us hit a wall. Sometimes even multiple times in our lives. If you find yourself there right now, I want you to know you are not alone. The truth is, you can faithfully follow Jesus and still find yourself in the dark at the wall. During the series, we've been talking about a man, an Old Testament prophet named Habakkuk, who hit the wall. If you've been with us, you know that Habakkuk lived during the final days of Israel's southern kingdom. It was a time when Israel was full of injustice and idolatry. In chapter 1 of Habakkuk's short book, he finds himself with a crisis of belief. Habakkuk's complaint is that the people of Israel have abandoned the righteous order God intended for their society. Habakkuk sees evil all around, and he wants to know, why, God, don't you care? Why aren't you doing anything? Doubts and fears start to flood in. Yet boldly, Habakkuk has enough faith to lament and even complain to God. This is a really good place to start when you're stuck at the wall. Habakkuk levels his complaint to God, and God responds by telling him, it's going to get worse. Now, that is not what Habakkuk wanted to hear. God says he's going to allow Israel to be overtaken by the evil empire of Babylon. But in chapter 2, God assures Habakkuk that he is not oblivious to the evil. He calls on Habakkuk to wait, and in that wait, to choose faithfulness. Which brings us to chapter 3. In chapter 3, we learn how Habakkuk responds to his wall experience. For us, his journey can be a blueprint of sorts, a guide for our own dark night seasons. It's almost like talking to a seasoned runner as you prepare for a marathon who says, yeah, I get it. I too have faced the wall, but here's how I got through it. That's what Habakkuk chapter 3 offers us. So, how does Habakkuk respond to the wall? Well, interestingly, he chooses to sing a song. Not exactly what you were expecting when someone is heaving and huffing with doubts and disbelief, but Habakkuk chooses to sing. However, don't get the wrong idea. This isn't a raindrops on roses, whiskers on kittens, Sound of Music kind of song. There are no brown paper packages tied up with string in Habakkuk's lyrics. No, Habakkuk sings a gritty song. It comes from the gut, and there are three verses in his tune. The first verse is all about remembrance. Listen to how Habakkuk sets up his song. He says, Lord, I have heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds, Lord. Repeat them in our day. In our time, make them known. In wrath, remember mercy. He's saying, God, I know your reputation. I know about your deeds. I'm going to remember them and ask you to repeat them. Isn't that an interesting way to approach God when you hit the wall? Lord, let me remember your deeds so that you, Lord, will repeat them. Habakkuk is reminding God who God is. And that's an interesting thought, that in our prayers, we can call on God to remember who he is. And as the verse continues, something very interesting happens that is easy to miss. Habakkuk starts talking about Teman and Mount Paran, which I don't know about you, I had never heard of before. So I had to look it up. And when I did, I discovered that Habakkuk is looking past Jerusalem to the area in the wilderness associated with Mount Sinai. And why is Habakkuk doing that? Well, he is remembering the time when God raised up Moses and used him to lead Israel out of their slavery in Egypt and brought them to Mount Sinai. It's almost like Habakkuk is saying, do you remember God? Do you remember those days when you led us out of oppression and led us out of our own disbelief? Can you do those kinds of deeds again? And then something happens as Habakkuk is singing. Look at the end of verse 3 leading into verse 4. His glory covered the heavens, and his praise filled the earth. His splendor was like the sunrise. Rays flashed from his hand where his power was hidden. Habakkuk is describing this vision he's having of God, which I always assumed was some kind of weird mystical type of thing. But actually, if you read this carefully, as Habakkuk looks towards Mount Sinai and remembers what God has done, all of a sudden flashes of lightning begin to dart across the sky. You really get the sense of it in verse 11. Sun and moon stood still in the heavens at the glint of your flying arrows, at the lightning of your flashing spear. You see, as Habakkuk is singing, looking out and remembering what God has done, a huge storm comes sweeping across the desert, confirming what Habakkuk already knows. God is on his throne. He is powerful, and he is in control. Have you ever had a moment like that? And I'm not saying that we should always associate God with nature, but there have been moments for me when I'm standing in front of some kind of profound natural beauty, when I'm overwhelmed by a deep conviction that there is a God who created all of this. I remember feeling it when I stood on the rim of the Grand Canyon. Have you ever been there? It's otherworldly, isn't it? As I gazed into the canyon, I felt this just overwhelming sense of my own smallness and of God's greatness. And somehow, glimpsing God's greatness reminds me that I'm gonna be okay. I think that's what's going on for Habakkuk in the first verse of his song. As he remembers, he encounters God in nature and something settles in him. Even though he has previously heard that Babylon is going to invade, even though he knows immense suffering that's going to take place, in remembering, something settles into him and allows him to move forward through the wall, which leads to the second verse of his song. If the first verse was remembrance, the second verse in Habakkuk's song is about acceptance. Look with me at verse 16. He sings, I heard and my heart pounded. My lips quivered at the sound. Decay crept into my bones and my legs trembled. Yet I will wait patiently for the day of calamity to come on the nation invading us. You see, sometimes when we hit the wall and we try to wrap our heads around what God is doing, our hearts pound. And our legs tremble as well. I mean, sometimes we shake at the wall. There's no getting around it. Whether it's some kind of suffering that shakes your life or it's a creeping fear that life is not what you planned, when you hit the wall like Habakkuk, you feel the weight of it all. But as Habakkuk faces the wall, he begins to accept it. He accepts the coming calamity. He accepts the suffering. He accepts the grief. Recently, I stumbled across an interview between Anderson Cooper, the CNN news correspondent, and Stephen Colbert, the comedian and late night host. Before seeing the interview, I never knew that Colbert's father and two brothers were killed by a plane crash when he was just a child. Interestingly, Anderson Cooper lost his father around the same time. Both men sat and talked with tears in their eyes about how their grief had shaped them. But the most moving part was when Colbert turned to Cooper and said, "I'm learning to love the thing I most wish had not happened." And Cooper replies, "Do you really believe that?" To which Colbert continues, "Yes, it is a gift to exist, and with existence comes suffering. There is no escaping that. If you are grateful for your life, which I think is a positive thing to do, then you have to be grateful for all of it. You can't pick and choose." Can any of us pick and choose? Can any of us pick and choose what suffering we will endure? Is it possible that if you can accept the wall, whatever that wall might be, that you can actually encounter God there? This seems to be what Habakkuk is learning at his wall. Which leads us to the final verse in his song. When Habakkuk moves from remembering to accepting, it leads him to rejoicing. Look with me at verse 17 and 18. "Though the fig tree does not bud, and there are no grapes on the vines, though the olive crop fails and the fields produce no food, though there are no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will be joyful in God, my Savior." Did you notice Habakkuk's refrain? Though the fig isn't budding, though the olive crop fails, though there are no sheep in the pens. I mean, those are pretty big thoughts. If you're dependent on fig trees and they're not budding, if you're dependent on olive crops and they're failing, if you're looking around for your sheep and they're not in the pen, those are some pretty big those. But in the middle of his those, Habakkuk has remembered who God is. He has accepted what God has chosen to do. And so now he rejoices even with his those. At the wall, we all have our own those. Can you imagine being able to genuinely say, "Though my job has fallen apart, though my relationships are in shambles, though my finances have crumbled, though my grief is overwhelming, though my health is failing, still, Lord, I will praise you." I wonder what it would take for you and I to be able to rejoice in our those. Don't you want that kind of faith? Don't you want that kind of freedom? That's a person who has broken through the wall. That's a runner who is going to make it to the end of the race. Which leads us to the most important lesson we can learn from Habakkuk's story. For you see, Habakkuk's song of remembering and accepting and rejoicing leads to a chapter 3 kind of faith. A lot of people want to have a very real, intimate, growing relationship with God. I bet you do. But what we often don't recognize is that God uses the hard times in our lives to prove his faithfulness and bring us to a chapter 3 kind of faith. And here's the reality. You can't really have a chapter 3 kind of faith until you've moved through chapter 1 and chapter 2 and faced a wall. Here's what I'd be willing to bet. The people you look up to spiritually, the people whose relationship with God is something you aspire to, I'd be willing to bet that they've all had their own wall experiences. They've been through some things. They've struggled. They've been in pain. They've suffered. And yet, when they found themselves at the wall, they've chosen to remember God's faithfulness, accept God's response, and continued to rejoice in the Lord. Author Janet Hagberg writes, "We cannot escape most of the crises in our lives, nor should we. In fact, these events frequently provide the energy for movement on our spiritual journey. If you want a chapter 3 kind of faith, you have to spend some time in chapter 1 and chapter 2 and face your own wall." When we started this series, we told you that you weren't going to get simple answers or everything tied up neatly with a bow. But what you were going to get was wisdom that could help you hold on to your faith in God when you walk through the challenging seasons of life. And so, as we bring this series to a close, let me remind you that God is at work in your wall seasons. He is present in the darkness. And once you realize that, you can begin to see the wall as a place of transformation. You might not get cured, but God can still bring healing. What has been broken may not be repaired, but God can still give peace. You won't emerge from the wall perfect, but God can still make you whole. So, as the writer of Hebrews urges us, let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Friends, continue to run your race. God is faithful, and he can grow a chapter 3 kind of faith in you.
We hope you were encouraged and challenged by today's message. Our mission is to help you find your way back to God. And by listening today, you've already taken your first step. And we'd love to help you take a next step in your relationship with God, the church, and the world. It's how we're all embracing the flourishing life that Jesus talks about, a life we call U+. Visit communitychristian.org to take a next step, learn more, give generously, and plan your visit. We hope to see you on a Sunday soon.